And we're doing some more Core Exchange 2013 on this Jumpstart, and we're going to dive right in pretty quick. I'm Jason, and...
I thought I was Jason.
You're Jason.
Yeah.
I'm Mike. You're Jason.
No, wait, no. I'm Mike.
Yeah, Jason. Mike. You really can't tell.
No one knows. We're in the halls. They're calling me Jason. They're calling him Mike.
Sorry. No one knows the difference. So what we're coming back to is we're going to be talking now about the message transport, right? The message transport.
After all, this thing is an email server, right?
So after all, eventually we actually get to sending email.
And it's actually really kind of easy to do.
Yeah, so here's what we're going to do is this is Module 4, Configuring the Message Transport. And what we're going to be looking at doing is just a quick architecture overview of the message transport. Nothing too major there. Configuring the transport with its connectors so that we can send and receive email. Managing transport rules. We can apply some rules to the email. And this new thing called data loss prevention, which is kind of interesting. So we'll take a look at these, starting off with an overview of the message transport, and there's this ugly slide of all of these components. Oh, man.
That's your favorite. It's a slide full of bullet points.
I know. I have this thing. I have to say, I firmly believe in long bullets suck, and yeah, no bullets are best. But at any rate, there's all of these components in the transport. Now, to me, it feels like, and tell me if I'm wrong, the transport to me... it's kind of the heart of the system. It's the thing that's making things go. What do we care about? Mail, right?
Exactly, yep.
So talk a little bit about that architecture. Maybe show us a cute little picture, and then we'll dive into this.
Yeah, like you said, text is hard to kind of scan through. Let's bring up a picture. So pictures, I already went out.
Good.
Yeah, pictures paint a lot here, and it's going to help. Because if you can visualize this, I'm telling you, it's going to make a big difference. Because it's not easy. I mean, it works. It's great when it works, it does its thing, and it just kind of works.
Chunks
but when you
got
to troubleshoot it,
right,
if you have to know the internals, it could get a little bit tricky. So and a picture there will help. So what I did is I went out to the TechNet documentation for Exchange 2013, went out to the mail flow. So you could Bing this, you know, like Exchange 2013 mail flow and find this article. Or if you downloaded the compiled HTML file for the help for Exchange 2013, you can search in there. But basically, this article or this portion of the documentation has a really awesome architecture diagram. And for me, when I looked at it, it kind of just helped make sense of all of these components. So let me minimize this. So this is where you would find that picture. It's down here. But what I did is I downloaded it, and I wanted to put it in this picture viewer because it was a little disproportionate. So this is a better view. So if we actually take a look at this, if you look at this top square, front-end transport service.
Yeah.
That's actually the CAS piece that's proxying the inbound and outbound SMTP connections.
So in this case, I mean, that's the CAS role right there. So if that was external, or if that's on a separate box, or if it's on the same box, that's what the CAS does. And he is just routing mail, right? He's not. There's no real
queue. I mean, if you actually look, the queues are down here, databases and stuff. So this guy is really just accepting connections. He's proxying those connections to the back-end transport
To the back-end. So he doesn't actually hold that email.
Yeah, what he does do is he makes an intelligent decision on where to send that information on or where to find a destination for that. So if you peruse the transport documentation in TechNet, there's a ton of information in there. If you have a small environment, this will be very easy for you to set up. If you have a single Active Directory site and you've got mail coming in, whether it's straight through your corporate firewall, you know, or whether it's going to an external device in the DMZ, or even if it's one of those cloud-based SMTP cleaning type of solutions and having that come into Exchange. If you have a small environment, it will be easy to set up. It gets tricky when you have multiple Active Directory sites. We have this concept of delivery groups, and depending on whether you have a DAG and multiple AD sites, you know, you have to have some understanding there if you're troubleshooting a mail flow issue. But in a small environment, it's super simple. Let's just keep going through this stuff, and we'll talk more a little bit about these things. So the front-end transport service, this is basically just your intelligent kind of get you to where you need to go type of thing. The transport service itself is made up of a few things. So if you look here, I mean, if you really look at these light blue colored boxes, right? Front-end transport service runs on CAS, even if it's on the same box as the mailbox server. The transport service here is where we're doing things like running the categorizer, which is basically figuring out who are the recipients for this message. Do I need to split this message up? Where am I sending this thing next?
And it's also things like high priority, low priority.
Yeah. Basically, things are coming in. We've got protocol agents, but essentially, messages come into the SMTP transport pipeline, if you will, through the submission queue. You know, it can come in from an inbound SMTP, can come in from a pickup or replay directory, which is a folder on the disk where you could actually drop a properly formatted message. Then we'll put that in the submission queue from those folders, then run it through the categorizer, figure out who to send it to. So there's a few ways you can get messages in here. And this is kind of what we're looking at here in this diagram. So delivery queues are basically that temporary storage location while we're figuring out where we're going to route the message. So that's where you're getting queued. So basically, if you had the role split, you had CAS in front of mailbox, you're never going to queue anything on that.
And that's really the important thing, right? There's nothing actually queued or stored on the CAS. It's all done on the transport service.
Right.
And part of that communication pipeline is everything goes into the submission queue first and then gets categorized and then hits whatever delivery queue, whether it's going to be going outbound or to another transporter.
Right. Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So what we had in 2010 and 2007 is we basically had two components. Essentially, you had, you know, transport that ran on HUD transport server, and then the mailbox server had like a submission service.
Yeah.
So somebody sent a message, right? If you just had the mailbox role only, he would say, you know, in the local AD site, hey, I've got a message that's in the outbox, needs to go out. Transport server would make an RPC connection to the mailbox server, grab it, bring it back, and then figure out what to do with it. So what we're looking at here is pretty much it's all SMTP, whether you're server to server. If you look at these arrows on the side here for the transport service, the mailbox transport service is like a separate piece of just the transport service. So we've got this layer in the middle. I know it's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of deep.
I mean, it's deep architecture,
right?
Stuff,
so we basically in the middle, you know, comes in through the top. We figure out where to route it in the middle tier. If it needs to go down here, we've got the submission service, which is kind of that piece that can figure out what transport service on other mail service. If I have to pick up a message via RPC and send it to another server, this is done within this service. Transport delivery service over here on the right. If you notice here, SMTP comes from transport service on other mailbox servers. So you have messages coming in perhaps from maybe another internal server. But if you've got all of your mail flow from the internet coming straight in through here, it can be very simple. And you can actually do that. And essentially, you would want all of your relay connectors or machines needing the relay, I should say, pointing to CAS. And if it's split, that's an easy decision. If it's the same box, then that's very easy to figure out.
Now, and just so that everybody knows, I mean, this diagram is really small on the screen, but on that page that you were showing about mail flow, you can kind of zoom this diagram out. And it's really not we want to dive into the details of the architecture so much is to realize that the CAS, even though you may be sending SMTP to him, he's not holding anything. It's going right into that transport service, into the queues that are on that transport service. Now, since the queues are on the transport service, which are on the mailbox role, how can I troubleshoot that? I mean, we have a queue viewer, right, that will show it to us?
Yeah, we've still got the queue viewer in the old toolbox. We've got the queue commandlets that we can run through.
Okay.
And then also, this will map well to what you see in the connectors when you're actually looking at the receive connectors on the server, because essentially, you're going to have multiple. And if you can't really visualize it without this picture, you're going to see a huge list, especially on a multi-role server. It's going to be like, whoa, what am I looking at here?
Well, as a matter of fact, why don't we go ahead and get into those transport connectors and maybe kind of refer back.
Absolutely.
So
yep.
Let's take a look at configuring the message transport. And one of the first things that we have to look at is how to get mail basically in and out. So mail flow is, well, we've got a couple of confusing things here. We've got accepted domains and remote domains and SMTP connectors. What does all this mean? So start us off with it, like accepted domains, because I mean, what does accepted domains mean?
Right. So if I had, when I did my installation of Exchange, if I just had contoso.local, obviously that's not going to be routable from the internet. So I might have to go in and add that domain that's public, contoso.com, as an accepted domain that I can tell Exchange, hey, you're responsible for routing mail for this domain. And also, we want you to be able to give people email addresses at contoso.com. So it's really a way for you to tell Exchange, if it didn't already know, this is the email address, namespace, that you need to keep in mind.
So let me ask you this. If you don't have a domain listed in accepted domains, is Exchange going to accept the email for it at all?
No, because you have to basically say, hey, we're handling mail for this.
So this is actually a way of telling Exchange, look, I'm about to go out to public DNS and route a domain using an MX record, route email to you. If you don't go into accepted domains and tell Exchange he's allowed to take it, we're just going to dump it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, why don't we start with that on configuring the domains, and why don't you show us accepted domains and then the connectors?
Cool. So we're still staying in the graphical for this. So let's hop over to the EAC. We'll go over to the left-hand side, go to Mailflow. And here's that list of connectors. Real quick, I just want to show. Yeah, so remember that the CAS is proxying. So front-end transport is what the role is on the CAS. These connectors are actually all in one box. They're all on this guy, 2013A, EX2013A. So he's got some connectors here, and then the mailbox server piece has its own connectors here. So this kind of will at least break up those first two kind of layers that we looked at the top, the front-end transport and the bottom. So let's just kind of look at this one first. Client front-end, right? So this would be for your applications, you know, your IMAP users, things like that. If you look at the scoping, it's loading up here. He's basically listening on port 587, right? So client front-end is going to proxy those connections on that port number to the mailbox server on the client proxy hub transport connector.
Okay, so the front-end client connector actually proxies to the hub
right.
transport connector that you have there. Okay.
Right. And you don't have to really do anything for that. It just works. Same thing for default. So if you come in here to default, this is the default front end. If you look at the scoping,
and
all
this
of
is
us
our
that do mail,
port yeah. 25, right?
All of us that do mail know that this is SMTP. This is what mail runs on, right? So this is already set up and working. If you actually look at the security here, notice that down
anonymous
at the bottom,
user, yeah. anonymous.
So that's a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
Because in 2010, we didn't actually do that
anonymous
by default.
Users,
yeah.
Right.
So like if you wanted to accept mail from the internet, you either had to set up the edge or you had to go in and create a receive connector or set anonymous on one of your existing default receive connector. So basically what this is saying is you install Exchange 2013, that front end will accept mail from anybody outside of your organization.
Which is what we want.
Yeah.
I mean that's
right.
That's not turning us into some anonymous relay.
Yeah, it's not a relay. It's just basically saying, hey, you're ready for internet email.
Okay.
So you're ready to handle this. And one of the things that's interesting about that, right, we're listening on port 25, and we can control the IP address list. You know, we can say, hey, only the box and the DMZ doing the message hygiene and all that stuff can connect to this connector. So you can secure it that way.
And I think right? you just brought up a really good point. I mean, right now it's taking any IP address.
Right.
So you could go out to your public DNS, point your MX record. It's taking anybody that's coming in, right?
Right.
And but one of the things you can do is restrict that IP address down to whatever hygiene solution that you have, whether it be an on-premises hygiene solution or an in-the-cloud solution. Like we were saying, FOPE. You could actually tighten that down,
like
which
that.
Would be an excellent security thing to take, procedure to go.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So, and when you do a multiple role install like this, we've got the front end default and then the back end default on hub transport. Now, notice here, if you look at the scoping, it's listing on port 2525.
Yeah.
So remember that we were looking at that diagram. Really, what I'm trying to hammer home is that those are different SMTP services or listeners. You know, we have them listening on running on the same box. So this guy usually would listen on port 25, can't because somebody's already listening on port 25.
Which is the
on
client
all
role
IPs.
That's doing that.
Yeah,
okay.
So the default front-end transport is listening on 25. This guy's listening on 2525. So the server handles that, bridges that gap for you. You don't have to even know really that it's there, but it happens. But if you had split the roles, CAS and mailbox, this would be listening on port 25 because this is really your transport service, what it's connecting to, which is that middle layer where we're going to categorize the messages and then figure out, do we need to route it into another internal Exchange server, maybe in another DAG or another Active Directory site? And then we've got those other, you know, transport components that we can work with to get
so
that stuff sorted out.
Let me ask you a couple questions here. So let's say I've got one server that has multiple roles on it. So the CAS is receiving on port 25. Transporter is receiving on 2525. They know how to talk to each other. But let's say that I separate those two roles. You're saying the CAS will receive on port 25 and the transporter that's on the mailbox role will receive on 25. Who do I send my inbound email to?
Your inbound email from?
From the internet.
To the CAS.
So you always go to the CAS
yeah.
box. Go through your hygiene device and then go
yeah.
to the CAS box.
Even if you have like a copier or a third-party application server inside the network that wants to do a relay, point it to CAS so CAS can figure out basically, hey, where do we need to route this message?
So for our concerns, we always throw it to the CAS, and then we let the backend transporter take care of itself right. from there.
And that's a different way of thinking, because in 2010, CAS was just client connectivity. Transport was its own thing.
Transport was its own thing. We did that transport with like an edge role or some other on-premises yeah. device.
Right.
It was separated from the CAS, but now CAS is part of this pipeline, this communication yeah. for it.
And we'll actually do a little bit of a test here and look at a little bit more on this, but let's go ahead and add an additional accepted domain.
Okay. I like accepted domains. It makes me feel accepted.
Yeah. That would be first, right? I don't know.
Big plus. Just, yeah, I know.
Let's do Contoso.com. Well, we need Contoso.
Oh, come on, do something fun. Do something fun. You're so...
ContosoInc.com.
Does it have to be Contoso? Gee whiz, you are just so, I don't know.
I like to make the name the same as the accepted domain, because then I look at
it and
everything.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Now, authoritative domain means that I have mailboxes in this exchange.
I own this domain.
I own this.
I am the last point of delivery.
I'm the last point. But it is worth to point out, although we won't go into details on it, that we could actually be a relay to a yeah. foreign domain or yeah, relay to another mail system.
We could share namespace, so we could have an internal relay where everything comes into Exchange, and if the recipient isn't local, hey, let's route it over a send connector somewhere else.
To send somewhere else.
Yeah, another mail system.
To another
third
mail
party.
System.
Yeah, so you could do that. But we'll keep it simple for now. We're just going to add this secondary domain. And there we go.
So now I've got users that don't have that as their email address.
Yeah, good point.
And this is what we were talking about earlier, right? Because we went out to the email address policies,
right.
and we couldn't actually do it because we didn't have another accepted domain.
Yeah, so basically there's two ways you could do it, right? You could come over here and on this whole list, go into the properties of each user.
Are you saying each user one at a time?
Yeah, you could do that, right? But what I'm trying to say is...
Why are you bringing this up that we do this one at a time?
No, what I'm saying
is... Why would you be mean to our friends out there and tell them to do it one at a time? That's insane.
I'm not suggesting that. Check this out. Watch. See, this is where we try to steer people in the right direction. It's all about seeing this and saying, hey, this looks like a really good idea to do here, but if I had 5,000 users... There's actually email address policies that will do that for me. So by default, everybody's going to automatically update their addresses based on that policy.
Okay.
And then you don't have to go in and touch every user. But the policy will update the user for you.
Users don't like it when I go around and touch every user. They get upset.
Yeah. That depends on the user, right?
Well, no. Pretty much all of them get upset. So.
Yeah. I can see why.
Stop touching me. Yeah.
Yeah, right. All right. So email address policies.
So by default, all users will get an email address policy. And this is what we were showing earlier. So go ahead
and we could modify this one and add the domain to that. Or we could just apply that new accepted domain to a specific OU or people that have certain attributes set or something like that. But, you know, we just create a new one so you get the idea.
Contoso Inc. How creative.
Yeah. Email address policy format, we'll stick with alias, so you can customize it here. Make sure you pick the right domain.
Notice now we've got a domain that's listed there because we added it to accepted domains.
Now we got it, yeah. And then basically you have the ability to control the sequence of how the policy gets applied because it does need to run periodically, right? You could update the users and all that kind of stuff. We can come in here and customize this stuff. I'm just going to let it go and do everybody. Does that work?
Yep.
So let's hit save here.
Dun, dun. Apply.
Yeah, and then he basically told us, go down here and do that. And then it tells you, hey, you're about to go and do this to all kinds of users. So if this email address policy applies to more than 3,000, you might want to run the command in the shell. Right? So something to think about in a large environment. So basically, we're going to go and read everything and try to
and
change
try to
everybody
change it,
at the
yeah.
same time. Yeah. So there it goes. I like the little pop-up where it's the progress bar.
And the color is
pretty cool.
I love the green. Did it work? Can you show us a user?
Yeah, let's take a look. So let's try Andy. We'll go over to email addresses. Hey, there we go.
Hey.
Notice we changed his primary. Right?
Yep, so. Changed his primary.
So, you know, you can control that as well.
That's
the way you would add one. And then, like I said earlier, though, you probably already have one set up. You're probably moving over from another version of Exchange. You've already got all this set up.
Yeah, you've already got it set up. But this is a great way to kind of go through and see, because there has been a lot of changes now, especially with the architecture changes. I think the biggest thing for me was getting that yes, you're actually pointing your mail to your CAS, and the CAS is then proxying that to the transport service, which, you know, took me a while to get used to. That's, for me, going to 2013.
Yeah.
And then the connectors were different. I wasn't expecting to see the front end and the hub transport connectors. However, the accepted domains and the policies, I mean, that's been the same for, you know, 10 years or,
right.
you know, almost, well, no, not 10 years, but 6 years, whatever it's been. So
one other thing on connectors,
yeah.
if I could, real quick. So we automatically receive internet email based on the way the default's configured. But if we want to send to the internet,
oh,
we don't have anything.
So what you're saying is we can take email, but we can't send
that's
email.
The way we're set up right now, right?
Okay, that sounds kind of like not cool.
So if we had come over from a previous version, maybe we had a send connector and we got lucky. But if we didn't, you know, we're setting it up from scratch. We got to create a send connector, send mail out to the internet.
I want to send mail. Show me how to do it because I want to send some email.
All right. So the good thing is it's just a wizard. Next. Finish, kind of. So
do we get a hat? I don't like wizards.
You could use a hat. Yeah,
I could use a hat. I know.
You're bald. Oh, wait. So am I. Okay. So I'm just going to call it internet because I, you know, stay very descriptive and creative with my names.
Yeah. I noticed you were very, very, very creative because there's a template, I think, down there that says...
Yeah,
internet.
For example, to send an internet email.
Now,
that
really,
that sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds good. But if you were to do it custom, you could set up the same way. Basically, you're going to specify who you're allowed to send to, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And then you would use this in conjunction with when we looked at internal relay domains.
Yeah. If you wanted to relay to an internal,
you wanted to have
domain.
A shared address space, you would create a send connector for that. You would say internal, and then you would route it to a specific SMTP host of some kind. Here, what it's asking is, what do you want me to do when I go to send outbound mail? Should I do an MX record query? Should I route it out to the DMZ to the appliance that's out there?
So let's talk about this for a second, because I know this was one of the things that catches a lot of people. Is this transporter going to do all the work of doing the DNS resolution, right, of how to get the email to the other side?
Right.
So he has to go out to DNS and query and look up the MX records. And then he had come in, okay, well, the mail will go there, as opposed to an option to send it to a smart host that does all of that work for him.
Right.
Isn't that a performance difference right there? I mean, isn't it better to send him to a smart host?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, a lot of people are going to have an appliance.
I mean, don't put a lot of gut emotion into it.
Yeah,
right
I mean,
whatever.
I don't know how much of a difference you would see there, to be honest, but I mean, it could be. I mean, certainly if you have something in the DMZ, then just let that thing handle it.
Like if you have some kind of SMTP relay, you know, drop off that is also, you know, your smart host, you can put it out there, some sort of device or something.
Pretty much
like that.
Use MX if you're sending straight to the internet from Exchange. And if you're going either to EOP or whoever in the DMZ or whatever, route it to that box and you're good to go. I mean, you could still use MX for that scenarios as well. You know, if you wanted to have some redundancy there, you could have like some weighted MX records that resolve to the IPs in the DMZ. So there's a number of ways you can carve this up. You can also choose here to pick just external DNS settings that you've specified in Exchange and not necessarily the ones that are set on the NIC on the server.
Oh, okay. Now,
so you can go into the properties under servers and say, hey, always use this DNS server list for MX record queries. That way you're not querying internal Active Directory DNS servers.
Oh, and actually that's a huge tip right there.
Yeah.
Because instead of using your internal DNS and then getting bounced out to an outside, you can just say, go right to that outside
address. Go to the internet, because the only time you query DNS for this purpose is to send to the internet. So you could set that up if you like.
Actually, that's a great tip. I like that.
So we'll just stick with the defaults here. We'll send directly to the internet. Now, the address space is important. Because remember, we can do a certain domain, but we can also just do everybody. So in an internet connector type of scenario,
it would be a star for
everybody.
Anybody. Yeah, we want to send it to everybody,
right.
And not a restrictive kind of thing.
Yep. So that's pretty easy to do.
Awesome.
Hit next. Source servers. Hit our plus sign again, so we can say, hey, 2013 is going to be the only servers talking to machines on the outside world, or machines in the DMZ to route messages outbound. All right, so we hit finish here. Now your send connector is created. Now what you might want to do in this scenario is, you look at the receive connectors, there's an outbound proxy front end on the CAS. So meaning that if I'm a mailbox server, I've got these transport components.
Right.
And when I go to send internet email, I might just try to send it straight out to the internet. But what you can do is you can tell mailbox to proxy the outbound SMTP connections through CAS as well.
Now, why would you do that?
So all of the messages are sourced literally from the same location. Yeah, they're all from CAS. They're all to and from CAS.
And if you had some kind of hygiene solution maybe on the CAS, you would want the outbounds going through it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you look at the properties here, just open this up real quick, you can see that this guy is pretty much, you know, he runs on port 717. So if you had the roles split, again, don't put firewalls in between Exchange servers, but you know, those are, that's a kind of a wacky port that you may never see before, right? So keep that in mind. But if you actually come over to the send connector, come into the properties, and then you say proxy through client access.
I see. There's where that switch is. Okay.
And then he knows to go to that port 717 on CAS.
And then out to the internet through CAS. Okay, yeah. That's pretty cool. Now, we've got accepted domains. What are remote? We've got the send connectors all set up.
Well, can I show? Can we show one other thing real quick?
Yeah.
This is a real handy thing that I use constantly to test this stuff, and it's as simple as telnet.
Oh, yeah, testing is good. Oh, yeah, simple testing. As telnet. Wait a minute, that's some pretty hefty words there, bro.
Yeah.
There's nothing simpler than telnet. By the way, most of you folks have been working with messaging. Telnet is the greatest thing in the world. I love telnet.
But it's just a good way to get a quick spot check of, is this listening? Can I route a message in here?
Yeah.
So on a Windows box, you probably notice you do telnet. Like in a recent install of Windows in the last couple of years, you run it and it doesn't work.
Right.
It's not installed by default
anymore.
It's
not installed by default. I know. They took away my telnet.
If you do add Windows feature, I love that. You don't have to load that server manager module. I love that. So add Windows feature.
Oh, the dynamic loading? Yeah.
Telnet client. I always put this on definitely my machine, but it's nice to have it on servers too, because you might have a situation where somebody has configured those connectors and maybe they've broken some kind of server-to-server communication, or you can't connect, or
and you want to try just, to telnet from one box to another.
Yeah. So this takes just a second to install here.
By the way, as a separate side note, I noticed you use the what is now an alias add Windows feature instead of install Windows feature.
Oh man.
Because you're on a server 2012 box. Install Windows feature, bro.
Wow.
But that's okay. You helped all the guys on
you
the 2000
I heard about that
stuff. Yeah.
And I totally forgot about that.
Windows feature. That's
so this,
okay.
This is just a function
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, it's an alias.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah, it's...
See?
That's
okay. Something every day.
You learn something every day.
So here's what I really want to show, right? Telnet to EX2013A, which is my front-end CAS, if I'm connecting to port 25.
Okay, perfect.
So if I connect to port 25, that's front-end transport default connector on CAS.
Got it.
Which an internet host would contact, which accepts anonymous email. All right, so there's the banner, and then, you know, if this was an SMTP conversation from another machine, you would issue a few commands and say, okay, we want to do this. We want to do a mail from. We'll do Mike at contoso.com. RCPT to, and here's where you can't screw up because you can't backspace, right?
So
I typed a capital L and messed that up. And
so
you can't backspace.
All over. Yeah.
So I hit enter and then it flashes because we have a tar pit interval we have to wait for. Unrecognized. Yeah. I started over RCPT to, and the only time I ever screw this up is when I demo it because you can't mess it up. Administrator at contoso.com. Recipient OK. And then you send a data command. And then, okay, start your message. And then test. And then send a period. And then we queue the message. Eventually, we should get a thing that says, hey, we queued the message. And then Exchange will try to route the message that way. But you don't have to go that far. It's just, let's go through and make sure.
See if you can get the connection, right?
Yeah, let me see if I can telnet to it. You know, so now it's queued for mail delivery. But let me see if I can get in there and issue some SMTP commands. Because if it breaks after I send the recipient to, you know, if it says unable to relay, then I know that I've got maybe a permission setting or something like that.
Something's wrong, yeah.
Right. And then, you know, if we hop over and take a look on this guy's email, I had something going on during the lab where I was changing stuff around. Did I send that to administrator?
You sent it to administrator.
Oh, okay. This guy's got OWA capabilities as well. And if you go into OWA, there's my administrator.
There's your, test. Isn't that it? That test one?
That's not it yet.
Oh.
Sometimes those will go into your junk email, but you can do like a git queue here.
Git queue is a great command, so.
So we're going to talk about high availability for transport. So I'll talk about shadow queues and stuff like that, but there's nothing stuck on this guy. And if you look at git queue on the other, right now I'm running git queue against 2013A.
Right.
If I run it against the other server, EX2013B, you'll see what's queued up over here. So we've got shadow queues, meaning the servers are communicating, but I don't see my message yet.
Maybe you need to hit refresh.
And I might have typed something wrong somewhere along the way. Like I misspelled it, and then it would have just sent an NDR or something like that.
But how about just a refresh?
Yeah, refresh might be it. Oh, there's refreshing
just
now.
Refresh.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, darn. I was really hoping all of a sudden it would show up in the mailbox so I could just make fun of you, but.
Yeah, so.
It's taking it a minute. Well, while this mail goes through, this is it's crossing all these queues. This is actually a good time to talk about some of the rules that you can apply to the transporter to control mail. So take a look. I've got a slide here for transport rules.
Oh, wait, what? Hang on. I'm logged into the control panel now as Mike. That's what it is.
Oh, you weren't logged in as administrator? You mean it's been working all this time? And
well, let me see. I just want to check that one thing, and then we'll move on. I know we're kind of beating a dead horse at this point, but I just want to look. Sorry. See, there we go. There it is.
Are you happy now? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it wasn't crazy, right? So the administrator was on 2010.
That's
you gotta
right.
You got to remind me of these things.
That's right, because you haven't moved the mailbox yet.
But you know, if you came in here and clicked on this little guy, there's all the headers.
Oh, so you can see.
Just let me copy this just real quick. Just show you this one quick thing. And then I'll stop.
Okay?
And then I'll stop. But I just want to show this. Let me do this a little bit. Let me get rid of this guy.
But what are you doing?
I just want to show you the hops. So let me kind of clean this up, get the font a little bit bigger. Let's go up to that. That looks good. So notice that, and that's a little bit too big. Stand by.
Yeah, we have nothing else to do. So.
Yeah, true. We're here all day. So notice that received from ex2013a.contoso.com via front end transport.
Oh, all right, I see what you're
showing. At 13:29:21. Okay. All right. At 13:29:57, all right, then front end transport proxied it to 2013a.
Oh,
to the SMTP server.
I see.
Right? So it was that proxy, first hop, second hop.
And then went to your mailbox.
Transport submission service, sent a message to the transport service on 2013A, and then he sent it over via SMTP to Exchange 2010.
And that's where the
mailbox for the other guy was.
So actually, between Telnet and using the message header, that right there can help you troubleshoot to see that everything is connected and communicating.
Yeah, and it shows you that sequence of like stages of transport in a high level.
Right.
You know, all the different things that we saw in the diagram, that's really what I was just
all those connectors putting together. Well, at the same time, one of the coolest things about the transport is that all email crosses as transport service. Well, this is a great time to start making maybe some compliancy decisions about email. It may be somebody sending an email that shouldn't get outside, or maybe somebody's, you know, a group of people are doing emails that shouldn't be outside. We have all these transport rules. Now, you've had these for quite some time. But why don't you show us just a couple of the transport rules under 2013 so that we can kind of control the email a little bit.
If you're in the EAC, you come over to Mailflow. Here's your rules. And really think about rules as kind of like Outlook rules, but on the server.
Oh, kinda. Yeah, that's a great way to, yeah.
I mean really kind of what it
on
is.
On the server.
But, you know, it's any message that flows through the transport server, we can apply these rules. So we've got a bunch of options here.
And those are kind of, so you've got things like apply disclaimer. Now, you could do this in 2010, but this is making it easier. We didn't have, you know, everything was a custom rule, right, in 2010?
Yeah, I mean, this is giving you, like, some things to choose from.
But
before, you had to, like, you kind of have an idea or pick through, you know, as you went through the wizard. So this is a starting point that will define some of the conditions and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's a good point.
But then you can go do a new rule, which is, everything
like a disclaimer, or a new rule, which is like starting from scratch. Yeah, absolutely. But a disclaimer is a, t- a, a typical one. You know, people put a legal disclaimer on there or something like that. You know, name it whatever you want. It's already got the do the following, but here's the apply if, and say, oh, well, if the sender or if the recipient is inside the organization. That's an easy one to test, right? And then enter some text. You know, sent from Contoso. You know, whatever. You get the idea. And then you got to decide what you do with the message. It, you know, if you do we put this at the very bottom? If we can't stamp it, what do we do? So this is just some other information here. And then, of course, we want to enforce that.
Enforce it, yeah.
And then you can do more options, additional things. So that's just a simple, hey, we want to put some data in every message that flows through. We want to touch every single message that flows through.
Now
and
you can
stamp a disclaimer on it. So yeah, that's just a basic one, but you can get pretty low level with these, like
so
drop messages. And
do, let's do a custom one real quick, and just kind of show some of those settings, which are again very similar to what you know we experienced in 2010. But still, it's worth taking a look at
because
I mean we're scanning every message that crosses.
So we'll create a new one from scratch. So hit the drop down, create new rule. And so now you got to pick all this stuff manually, right?
Right. Like are you going to be creative? Can you put in like Bob's rule or something? Or
Bob's rule is pretty good, right?
Oh, wow. No. You actually typed it. No.
But yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay. So select something. And
all right. Apply this rule if.
Oh, let's do like, do you want to do locator or the sender is? What I like is, you're going to see one of my favorite rules. The sender is.
Okay. Clicking.
And now what you would do is you would pick like somebody you don't like. So
where's Jason?
Like, well, don't pick Jason. Okay, yeah, pick me. So you pick somebody you don't
just
like.
Just kidding. No.
This is how powerful this is, though. And then, so go ahead and say okay. And then do the following. And I think it's towards the bottom that it just says drop it.
Yeah.
Delete the message.
Delete it without notifying anyone.
Anyone. So while this is kind of a joke, but if you look at those different options that you have and what you can do both on where to apply the rule, on how to grab the rule, and what you can do to this, you can come up with some pretty specific rules that you want done.
Right.
Do you have a favorite you want to show?
I like to do the disclaimer, and then you can actually... The thing that's cool about the disclaimer, especially for a demo, is you can query the Active Directory attributes, some of them, and inject them into the message. But you know, there's basically some variables you can use in there. So that's a good one for a demo. But you know, we're moving pretty fast, so we got to talk about DLP. So
do we have to talk about DLP?
Yeah, we just got to run by it real quick. It's an interesting topic.
This is brand new, right? To 2013 DLP. DLP, we don't you just love the TLAs that we use in this industry? Three-letter acronyms, DLP. Data loss, you know, this doesn't even, title didn't make sense to me at first. It's data loss prevention. And I'm thinking that it was like a high availability feature that we're going to get to later, but it's actually not. This is kind of a leaky faucet thing.
It's all
thing,
about preventing leakage, absolutely.
It's all about, yeah, so explain that. What are we talking about when we say
we
prevent
just
leakage?
Try to get to a point where we're not exposing private information to the outside world.
So corporate like confidential data.
Credit card numbers, social security numbers. Hey, if you're an admin, IP addresses are something that you don't maybe want out there, internal IPs, stuff like that. So it gives you a way to take some of those classifications on information that might be private and then have Exchange either send a report and say, hey, somebody's leaking this information, or even go as far as blocking that information. So it's really kind of like transport rules, but with even more functionality.
So these are really intense custom transport rules. Why don't you show us DLP? Because I think one of the amazing things is, you know, Microsoft's already put a lot of work into trying to help people out with this.
Yeah, so let's hop over to compliance management in the control panel. Head over to data loss prevention. And to be honest, we could probably spend a half a day jumpstart on this. So, you know, we don't want to go too crazy here. But if you come in here and create a new policy tip, do an add here. So you can kind of come in here and do like a simple tip, kind of like a mail tip.
Okay.
Right?
To like give them a warning that you're about to violate or.
Yeah. So let me start over. There's a different way I'd rather do this. Let's do this. Let's do
a new DLP.
A new custom DLP policy. All right, so let's do this. This is a little bit, and we'll just, I mentioned the IP thing, right? So let's say IP, IP info, all right? So we'll go ahead and we're going to enforce this right away. Save it. Now we'll double click on it and go into rules now that it's created. And now we can add some rules to this guy. Okay. So we can block messages with sensitive information. So we'll do a block because we don't want this stuff going outside the company. So kind of like we saw earlier with transport rules, with a lot more conditions and actions. Right, so here we've got the sender located outside the organization. And if the message has sensitive info, so we click this, sensitive information types, in this case, is going to be our IP information. So notice, you know, there's all kinds of stuff in here, driver's license numbers, passport numbers, bank accounts.
And this is actually kind of a cool list that it's already been pre-populated.
Yeah, this is all pre-populated.
A lot of financial stuff, passport numbers. I mean, there's so many.
And I'm sure you'll see third parties generating their own. And
you know, I see IP address.
So there's your IP, right? So you pop that guy in there. And then that's just your sensitive information type. Of course, you know, you can add more. But that's my kind of my condition, see if this matches. And then I have my actions. So if it does find a match, let's generate an incident report. Let's let the administrator know that, hey, somebody's trying to expose this information to the internet. You know, we don't want that. We can say, when we send this guy the report, what information about the message properties should he know about? He probably wants to know who sent it, who was the recipient, what was the subject, that kind of thing. Right? So you can sit here and populate all these. And then what you could do is you could notify the sender in Outlook 2013 with a policy tip.
With a policy tip.
Right. So if you didn't have this and you just did a block, they would basically get an NDR back later saying, no, you can't do that. That's sensitive information.
But a policy tip would warn them up front, like the mail tips.
And like a mail tip.
And say, look, you're about to try to expose information that's not allowed. Mm-hmm. Now, if they hit send, they're still going to get the bounce back, right?
Right. And so, if you've got like Outlook 2010 or something, you just want to do a block and not a policy tip, you could do that too.
Well, can you do me a favor and just go back into the DLP thing and just show the templates? I mean, you made a custom rule using some of those templates, but can you hit that, not your IP
this
info?
This thing here?
Yeah, and just kind of...
This guy right here,
no,
right?
Not that guy. Oh. Not that guy. Ah, the thing with the plus sign.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, just do a new DLP policy from template and just let everybody see that there's... If you go down and choose a template... They've already preloaded a lot of templates in there to help you with information. Now, obviously, what Mike just showed is the ability for you to create your own custom one. But look at all that stuff that's in there that you can already start to prevent from leaking from your... I just love it. We're preventing leakage now.
Yeah, that's serious business.
Yeah, it is very serious business. And I think this is actually really cool that Exchange is in here. I'll be interested to see what third parties do with it going forward. But it looks like Exchange is actually doing a lot with it, especially allowing me to do custom ones. Oh, did you just set up a social security? Oh, there you go.
Yes, I saved it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And you can come in here and continue doing what we're doing. Of course, you have the ability to do some testing in here and things like that. But there's all of your rules. This one is much more robust, right? So you have multiple
ways of preventing social security.
The other one that we did earlier was a real simple one. This is doing more stuff.
Well, you know, actually, this is kind of cool because this is actually where our stopping point for the transport service. But
yeah, it was a short and sweet kind of flyby, but it was awesome.
But there's a lot of stuff in here. Yep. I mean, we came out of the client access server at the last module, and there's a lot of stuff to configure in client access server. Now we got the transport. We've got to combine the client access serving the transport for the movement of mail flow. And it's changed considerably, as you showed. I mean, you know, client access is now where you're going to be pointing everything to. And, you know, it's not storing the mail. It's still in the transporter. But, you know, that has changed quite a bit. And all of the connectors. So we did the connectors.
Did accept the domains.
Did accept the domains.
Email address policies.
Email address policies.
Took a look at transport rules.
Transport rules, which... are great, but with the, you know, a big enhancement is definitely DLP, I think.
Totally. Yeah, you could go crazy in there and spend a lot of time in there.
And actually,
that's what I would do, is get a lab set up and spend a lot of time poking around in there playing with it.
Yeah, because DLP could help a business considerably with leakage on it. So, well, anyways, no, that's not supposed to be funny that way. Stop laughing. That was all serious, Jason. That wasn't funny, Jason. So when we come back, we're going to take 10, and when we come back, we're going to move into, again, I don't know what we're going to move into. We're going to move into something really fun and cool on our way to migrations.